right, good afternoon, Shilim. I have written on my notes, good morning, City Light. That's where I was earlier this morning. I spoke at City Light Seoul, and it was a great time. And they showed the video from the ride there, and one of the riders named Aaron, he gave a short testimony. And so I thought, hey, why don't we do it here? And thank you, Rona, for sharing that on the spot. You did a great job. As most of you guys know, my name is John Michael, and I've been living in Korea for over 10 and a half years doing orphanage ministry out here. And today's message is going to be about one of the ministries that I direct, Oak Tree Project, a scholarship and mentoring program for kids that grow up in the children's homes here in Korea. And so I want you guys to open up your Bibles to Psalm 68. Psalm 68. Title of today's sermon is Oak Tree Project and God's Heart for the Hurting. It's a long title. Oak Tree Project and God's Heart for the Hurting. Psalm 68 is going to be verse 5 and 6. Says this, Father of the fatherless and protector of widows is God in his holy habitation. God settles the solitary in a home. He leads out the prisoners to prosperity, but the rebellious live in a parched land. Fatherless, that word fatherless in the Old Testament is translated as orphan. It's another way of writing it. Father of the orphan, protector of the widows. In verse 6 in the NIV, it says God sets the lonely into families. So it says, God sets the solitary in a home. Another translation is, God sets the lonely into families. Now, if you are a believer of God and then a believer in the Word of God, you believe that this is truth. This is the truth of God. This is God's Word. It's infallible. There are no mistakes in here. There are no like, well, I believe Matthew 4, but I don't believe Matthew 5. You can't do that. It's either you believe it all or you don't believe in it at all. Okay, and so when it says something about God, that means that is who God is. God is a father of the fatherless. God sets the lonely into families. This is who he is. Now, I came to Korea in 2005. I had studied engineering at Virginia Tech, and through some crazy circumstances, that's a whole nother sermon, God led me to Korea to live in the children's home for 3 years. And I got to know the kids more, and I moved out after 3 years, an apartment right in the neighborhood, and I've continued to serve at that home to this day. I serve there during the week, and I've gotten to know a lot of lonely kids, a lot of hurting kids, but thankfully in the children's homes, they're at least surrounded by each other. Now, they might not be related, but they have similar backgrounds, and so there's kind of an understanding of each other. And they have dorm parents that work there. These are social workers that got a degree from a university in social welfare, and they come and live in the homes with the kids, working every other day, taking care of the kids. There's a manager, a dietitian, a cook, those types of things. So they are taken care of in the homes. They are not all alone living in some street alley or anything like that. They grow up in these homes. But what I noticed was when the kids graduate, they go from living with 40 to 100 kids in the home to suddenly living on their own. And the way Korea works it is, if you are an orphan, if you grow up in an orphanage, when you graduate from high school, you must move out of the orphanage within 2 weeks. The orphanage will try and find you a place to live. It could be government housing. It could be, you know, you live, if you get into university, maybe you can live in the dorm. Or it might be they'll find a very cheap apartment and just put a bunch of graduates in that same apartment, like 4 or 5 boys living in a small little apartment. But once the orphanage has helped the kids move out, the kids are no longer their responsibility. The orphanage goes back to taking care of all their other kids, and the kids, they're on their own. So now they have to learn how to feed themselves, how to clothe themselves, how to take care of themselves, how to balance a budget, how to work an honest living. And for a lot of these kids, they don't know what they're doing, so they just eat ramen, and they play video games a lot, and they lose a lot of weight. And then they start to panic because of money. And different issues come in. And a lot of these kids, they become traps for gangs, for sex trafficking, what Rona was sharing about, for all sorts of evil. And I heard of kids within just a couple years living in the home, kids that committed suicide from depression, being lonely. And my heart broke for them. And I remember one dorm mom saying, there's a lot of different kids, you know, in the home that when they watch the older kids graduate and leave the home, it's like teso harte. When they leave the home, the younger kids, some of them get afraid and they're fearful of what is that going to look like for me when I leave the home. And there was one boy, his story was from my children's home. He just recently got married, and so I went to his wedding. It was really good to see him again. But his story was his parents divorced when he was really young. He doesn't really remember his mom. He was raised by his dad. His dad was an alcoholic. And so even when he was in kindergarten, his dad would have him work and earn money, and then the dad would steal it from him and use it on the alcohol. And when the boy, I think, was in first or second grade, his dad got in a motorcycle accident. And so the boy was brought to the hospital, and he was in the hospital room as his dad passed away. And so he watched it, and then he was put in the children's home where I serve. And the worker said that when he was young, especially in elementary school, they couldn't find him in the home, and they would look outside the home, and they would usually find him in the park near the home, and he'd just be sitting by himself. And they would ask him, you know, what are you doing? And he said, oh, I'm just thinking. I'm thinking about the future. I'm thinking about, you know, what things are going to look like when I grow older. And just a lot of fear. He's a very contemplative kid, very sweet kid, good kid. But this is one of the fears that these kids face, is going out on their own. Okay? The living on their own. And for these kids, they're easy prey because they don't have someone to defend them. You know, they're struggling, and now suddenly someone comes up and is nice to them, is giving them attention. Hey, why don't you hang out with us guys, you know, and we'll be your family, we'll be brothers. Or, hey, you're very attractive, why don't you hang out with me? I can help you make money very easily. And this is how they get brought into gangs and into sex trafficking. I shared at Jeremiah prayer meeting, there's a lady that works for Compassion International, and she shared that she meets up with the kids. She grew up in an orphanage, and she meets up with her friends that grew up in the home. And she said that half of the girls that she grew up with in the children's home are in prostitution, and the other half are all dead. And she's the only one that has a legitimate job. That's the reality that is out there. And, you know, for the students in Oak Tree Project, they don't know this reality as much because they're well taken care of. And I'll show you a video of a couple of our students in a short bit. But for the other kids, at that wedding of the older boy that got married, we saw another boy who is about Sky's age. And he looked like he was in his mid-40s, just a tough life. And you know, he was just constantly smoking. And you could just see the emptiness and the hurt in him. This is the reality for a lot of these kids. And they have a lot of deep rejection in them. And so they don't try much in what they do. They don't think they're good enough. So a lot of these kids don't even get into school. Nelson Mandela, Johann Sebastian Bach, Steve Jobs, John Lennon. These are probably some names you might know. These are people with the same backgrounds as the kids that grow up in the orphanages here in Korea. Same backgrounds. Foster care for a lot of them, orphanage, that type of thing. They became huge influences on the world. And there's many others like them. But here in Korea, there's a stigma against orphans. And the reason for that is bloodline. All right, bloodline in Korea and Confucianistic culture, especially Korea, is very important. You are my bloodline. You have my family name, okay? You are my family. That's what they're taught in Confucianism. Your family is so important. It's like the most important thing. And for an outsider to come in and to live in your house, yeah, you'd be hospitable and you'd be nice to them, but it's almost impossible to see them as family. Why? Because they're not a kin. They're not my kin bloodline. They're not of me. Okay? And so because there is that bloodline stigma, adoption is almost foreign here in Korea. It's very hard for Koreans to understand adoption. Why? Because this kid is not my bloodline. But it goes beyond adoption. It goes into jobs. When you apply for a job in Korea, you have to write down your parents' background. Why? Because bloodline is important. Your family background is important. So this is my father's job. This is my mom's job. This is their background. Okay? But for a kid that grew up in a children's home, what do they have to write? I grew up in a children's home. I don't know my parents' background. And when they do that, the employer immediately knows, okay, this is the kid's background. I'm sorry, you can't get the job. Or, okay, I'll hire you. But they give them less pay than all the other employees. They take advantage of these kids. And of the girls that have graduated from my home, and I've spoken to some of them, they've shared about being sexually harassed in the workplace. And a lot of them, when they first leave the home, it's hard for them to find work. A lot of them end up working in hope cheaps, in bars. And that's the last place you want an 18-year-old girl to be working in. But for some of them, you know, I was able to encourage them. They were able to work in like a burger joint. And I'm like, all right, that's so much safer, you know, just like a Burger King or something like that. But then I find out from the same girl that, oh, now my manager is you know, threatening me and he's sexually harassing me. And the girl is shaking. She just doesn't know how to respond. And I asked her, well, does he do this to the other female employees? She said, no, only me, because he knows my background. Easy prey. Orphans are easy prey. They don't have someone to defend them. They don't have someone to stand for them. They don't have that emotional support, someone to give them a hug, someone to tell them the truth. No, this is who you are. No, you're more valuable than this. They need family. These kids need support. It's especially hard for kids that get into college and lack support. So when they graduate, they get that $5,000 from the government. It's about Obek Monon, and then they move out. Obek Monon, $5,000, that's enough for maybe one semester, a semester and a half of college. So when the kids get into college, they not only have to worry about their living needs, trying to work and just survive, now they have to worry about their tuition. All right, and that tuition adds up very quickly. So kids that get into college, they often have to work full-time while studying full-time in order to get by. And when you have to work full-time and study full-time, you have little time to study outside of the classes. So your grades tend to go down. You also have almost no time for friends or emotional support. And so your heart also gets worse and worse and worse condition. And we've seen over the years, I've been here 10 and a half years, so many kids get into college with great potential, drop out. Okay, and some of them fall into sex trafficking because now they're in debt. Now they need money. And now I feel like a failure. I got into college, but I couldn't do it. And so they fall apart. There's one dorm dad from my children's home. He grew up in the children's home. And he's a little bit older. He's a little older than me. But he grew up in the home. He graduated and he got into a small Christian university. And he was studying there. But in order to study there, he was studying social welfare. He had to do a practicum. He had to work during the day to get this practicum while taking night classes. But then he needed money to get by. So he would start work at 8 o'clock, work throughout the day at that social welfare center. Then he would go and take classes into the night. And then at midnight, he would go to Nam De Moon Market and he would unload boxes and crates, okay, for the people that worked there until 5 in the morning. He would sleep 2 hours a day. And then on the weekend, he would sleep like 30 hours straight. He would just knock out. And his body is just, it got destroyed from those few years. It's one thing to lift crates from midnight to 5 in the morning. It's another thing to do that on top of two other jobs. Okay, one doing that practicum, another being a full-time student. On top of only sleeping a couple hours at night. And he said that he would often, you know, do this during his classes. And so he would have to go to his professors and get on his knees and beg, please pass me, okay, for the semesters. And that was how he got through college. Now, he didn't have a mentor. He didn't have someone looking out for him. He didn't have a good, you know, surrounding of fellowship. And so he got into gangs. And he got into some bad company. He's got a lot of scars to show it. And when he first came to the home, he was a very scary man. He came and he works at the orphanage. And he brought that gangpe, you know, that gangster style. And he scared everybody. I mean, everybody's scared of him. And it took him some time before that gangsterness started to wear off. And he started to smile and to be kind. But that was his background. And, you know, as I saw these kids, 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, these years going by, my heart would break for them. But I would think, well, this is Korea's responsibility. This is the church's responsibility. I'm just a missionary. I got my own. I'm just trying to get by on my own. I'm just called to this one little orphanage. Like, this is not me. This is someone else's battle. But as G became a full-time missionary, as Mi Jung came on as a full-time missionary, and their hearts broke as well, it just got to the point where, man, something's got to be done. No one's doing anything. Something has to be done for these kids. And for Mi Jung, she mentored a girl at children's home. She started when this girl was in high school, and the girl got into university. And Mi Jung mentored her through university. And this This girl, when she got into school, she knew she would have to work in order to get by. But the only job she could find was at a hopchip, at a bar. And Mi-jung was just adamant that, no, I'm not going to let you work at a bar to get by. And Mi-jung said, let's pray. God's going to provide. And so they prayed together, and this girl, through just God working, was able to get a job during the day at a kindergarten place, teaching, which was lined up more with her major, and she was able to take night classes. That was God's provision. And we were so encouraged when that happened. Like, wow, God cares for these kids. He really does. And but the girl struggled. She had a hard time. She would have to work all day, study all night. She would get home late at night, and she would be exhausted day after day after day after day. And that exhaustion would lead her to call Mi-jung and just cry and be so discouraged by what was going on. And Mi-jung would just encourage her, would build her up, and just kept at it with this girl, just kept at it. And soon, through Mi-jung's support, through prayer, through God working, this girl, her grades started to go up. She started to grow stronger in herself, grow stronger in the Lord. And she went from getting D's and F's her first year to ending up, I think it was almost straight A's towards the end. That is amazing. She didn't even get a scholarship. She just had a mentor. She just had someone believing in her, praying for her. And through that, she was able to succeed. And we're so proud of her. She is doing so well now. And so she was the inspiration for Oak Tree Project. We saw, okay, this one girl went from being so desperate and in such a horrible place to now doing so well and loving the Lord and growing with Him. We got to do this. We got to start Oak Tree Project. So in 2012, we were able to raise about $25,000, which we thought was a lot of money. It's not, but it was for us that year. And we thought, all right, let's accept four kids. And the way we'll do it is we'll give them a living expense scholarship, 500,000 won a month. That's about $500, 500,000 won a month for their living expenses. That means no part-time jobs during the semester. This will provide for their food, for their clothes, for their cell phone, for their transportation, the basic needs. Okay, and we'll give them 500,000 won, and then we'll give them a mentor who will call them once a week, and we'll meet up with them once a month and be that family. Just as Mi-jung was family to that one girl, let's be family to these other students and see how they do. So that's how it started, and we accepted four students. In 2013, we were about to start, and I honestly still had a lot of concerns. We were just starting with G. She was a mentor. Mi-jung was a mentor, and then my wife Sky and I, we were mentoring two kids. And this was like the guinea pigs. You know, we're gonna give this a shot and see if this works. But I had fear. We raised $25,000 in 2012. Can we continue to raise that much? Can we raise more? Because Mi-jung lives off of full-time support. G lives off of full-time support. So do I. That's a lot of money to raise on top of our own. So I had concerns. But I remember in February of 2013, I invited a couple girls from my children's home that had graduated and moved on. I invited them to have a meal together during Lunar New Year's, Solar. And that's a big holiday in Korea where all the families come together for 3 days. But for orphans, that's usually a very hard holiday because they don't have a family to go to. And so they're reminded of that. So a lot of the kids will make up stories after they leave the home. They'll tell their friends, oh, I'm going to see my family in, you know, some other city. And they're not. And they just hide away. But they don't want their friends to know that they're so lonely. Okay, and so I messaged these two girls, and I said, hey, you know, 가족처럼, like family, let's meet up and have a meal together over Solar, over Lunar New Year's. And they replied back, sure, great. And so we met up, just two girls, Sky and myself, and we're sitting there, we're eating and talking, and then I asked the girls, hey, what are you going to do the rest of the holiday? There's two more days. What are your plans for Lunar New Year's? And one of the girls, just a tear came out of her eye and came down her cheek, and then more. And she started crying, and then she started crying heavier. And it was getting to the point where people in the restaurant were like, what is going on over there? And you know, we're not sure what to do. And so Sky gets up and takes her to the bathroom and is washing her up as she's just wailing and crying. And Sky asks her, you know, what's going on? And the girl admits her tears, says, you know, well, I'm crying. Just life's been so hard. I've been so lonely. She has two siblings, but they had a fight, and they were not going to see each other over the Lunar New Year's. And she just had no one to be with. And, you know, she was barely struggling to get by. This is the same girl that had been sexually harassed, you know, a year earlier. And she was just crying that life had been so hard. But then she said, but I'm also I'm also just so thankful that you guys are meeting with me today. And when I saw JM's Facebook message, I was so thankful and so blessed that I wouldn't be alone over the Lunar New Year's and that I had someone that I could meet up with. And so her tears were both tears of sadness and of it being so difficult and so himdoro. And then her tears were also of thankfulness that she had someone to be with. And Sky was able to comfort her and wash her up. And she came back out. We finished our meal, watched a movie together, and it was a good time. But when Sky told me what had happened in the restroom later that night, it was just a conviction in me. We got to do this. And we can't think small. We got to think big. Because there are so many other boys and girls that are in need of family. They are in need of support, not just for college, but in life. They need someone to believe in them and to encourage them. And so we went ahead and we started Oak Tree Project in 2013 with 4 students. We grew to, I think, 9 students the next year, grew a little bit more the next year. Now we're at 18 this year. We have 18 students on scholarship, and our prayer is to continue to grow. Right now we've just accepted kids from Seoul. Next year we want to expand to Gyeonggi-do, the region outside of Seoul. And then we want to, I mean, we've heard from orphanages in Gwangju, in Busan, and in other areas. They love this program. They see it's not just us throwing money at the kids. And it's not us meeting up as a mentor and grading the kids. How are you doing? All right, check, 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 check. No, we have genuine hearts of loving these kids and being family to them. And the scholarship is something where they have to be accountable for. They have to get a 3-0. They have to keep a budget, expense report, okay? And we make them grow up through this scholarship. The worst thing you can do to someone who is homeless or someone really hurting is just throw money at them. It's almost heartless because you're not giving any of yourself to them and you're just giving them money where in their brokenness, that money will often go to something of addiction. It's not healthy. They need accountability and they need family. God sets the lonely into families. God doesn't throw money at the lonely. He sets them into families. So Oak Tree Project. Now, I've shared some heavy stories of some of these kids, and I got plenty of other heavy stories, but I'm going to show you a happy video, okay? Yay, let's lift our spirits. And let me show a happy video of 2 of our kids. This video is unscripted. We just asked the 2 kids, how have you been blessed through Oak Tree Project? And this is what they said. Let's go ahead and cue it up.
멘토에게 가장 감사했던 점은 세 가지가 있는데요. 일단 신앙적으로 바로 잡을 수 있게 도움을 준 거에 대해서 되게 감사하게 생각하고 있고요. 두 번째는요. 제가 혼전순결 관련해서 교육을 해주신 거에 대해서 되게 감사하게 생각해요. 우리나라 같은 경우는 혼전순결 교육 관련해서 되게 생소하기도 하고 되게 꺼려하는 그런 교육 중에 하나이긴 하는데 멘토 선생님께서 그런 것들에 대해서 되게 바로 잡아주신 것 같고요. 거기 안에서 제가 다른 친구들보다 좀 더 올바른 방향으로 갈 수 있도록 도움이 되어주신 것 같아요. 그리고 세 번째는요. 일단 하루를 마감하기 이전에 진쌤이 저한테 제시해주신 그런 게 있었어요. 감사한 일을 세 가지를 적어보는 거였어요. 이런 삶 속에서 과연 내 감사한 일이 나올 수 있을까라고 생각을 했지만 적어보니까 나오게 되더라고요. 그리고 그 안에서 내가 조금 더 밝은 에너지로 살아갈 수 있도록 이렇게 그런 도움이 되어준 것 같아요. 내 멘토 선생님이 있다라는 게 정말로 감사한 것 같아요.
저는 참나무 장학금을 통해서 하나님과 한 걸음 한 걸음 더 가까워졌다고 생각합니다. 그리고 또 하나님이 살아계시는 것을 또 느꼈고 또 제가 불평 중에서 또 감사함을 찾을 수 있었습니다. 또 무엇보다도 제가 스카이쌤과 JM쌤이 언제나 제가 외로울 때 언제나 먼저 연락해 주시면서 저의 외로움을 이길 수 있게 도와주셨습니다. 저는 이 감사한 것과 또 하나님과 가까워지는 것이 저뿐만이 아니라 많은 아이들에게 느꼈으면 좋겠다고 생각합니다. 그래서 이 참나무 장학금이 더 커졌으면 좋겠고 또 많은 아이들이 하나님을 알아갔으면 좋겠습니다. 옥트리 프로젝트 파이팅!
Yay! Uplifting! Pastor Joel put that video together for us. He's now on the East Coast in America, but we're really grateful for him for doing that. He worked with very few props. They filmed it in Pastor David Ahn's apartment and used his skateboard for that weird moment where G and the girl were on it. But it just did a great job. And you can see the light in those kids' faces. And it wasn't that case, you know, for those kids before the program. And if you had met them at the very beginning of the program, you know, they weren't like, you know, they had personality. But through the program, there's been a light that's been emanating from them stronger and stronger. And it's so encouraging for us, and it encourages us to keep going at this. And this program, it's not easy. For mentors, you call them once a week, you meet up with them once a month. It doesn't sound like a big responsibility. And honestly, time-wise, it's not a huge responsibility. We have a guy who's a CEO of a company in Apgujeong. He's one of our mentors, and he makes time to call his student once a month and meet up with him for a meal. Calls him once a week, meets up with him for a meal once a month. And so the time thing isn't so big, but it's a strain on your heart. And it's a strain because these kids, some of them are just so broken and so struggling. Just like Mijong's girl who just first got into college and would cry and just, you know, be in such need. It's not easy. So you have to be prayed up. You have to be in a community where you can get encouraged yourself for these mentors. And I just really honor the mentors because I know what it is to take care of these kids. It takes prayer. It takes steadfastness and just moving in God's heart. But we've been seeing transformation in these kids. And some of the most difficult kids, including that boy who looked so great in the video, they failed to meet the GPA requirement. We require them to get a 3.0. That might sound like pretty good, but in Korea, it's a 4.5 system. In America, 3.0 is like decent because it's out of 4. But here it's a 4.5 GPA scale. So 3.0 is like, you know, it's just slightly above average or whatever. And so for these kids, if they don't get a 3.0, that means that they go on probation. All right. And what probation is they don't receive the scholarship for 6 months. You still have the mentor, but you don't get the scholarship for 6 months. And if you keep it up with your mentor and if you get your GPA back up, over a 3.0 will take you back on to receive the scholarship. And that's the rule. And we give them the option. Hey, you know, if you're tired of the responsibilities of this program, you can drop. We have had some students drop, but some of them have kept at it. But they will say things like, oh, I got a 2.7. I can never get a 3.0. It's too difficult. It's too hard. I'm not smart enough. It's that spirit of rejection that they've been dealing with for so long. And we just keep encouraging them. Mentors, keep encouraging them. And we've seen that the students that went on probation and stuck through it, they're our best students now. One, they appreciate the program because they go for 6 months without getting the scholarship. And they're like, oh my gosh, this scholarship is so helpful. So they're so thankful for that. Two, they become more thankful for the mentor because they realize through the mentor's encouragement and advice, they've gotten through. And three, they become more confident in themselves. So I actually did it. I was able to get a 3.0. And we watched them get like a 3.1 and then a 3.4 and then a 3.8. And now these are the kids that are like, I'm going to get a 4.0 this semester. I'm going to get a 4.0. It's the kids that went on probation. And that's beautiful because I've served these kids so long in the children's home and seen so many with that rejection, that insecurity, I can't do it, just give up. And to see some kids finally hitting their potential encourages me so much. You know, when I taught in the children's home, I mean, I still do, but I remember in 2007 teaching a junior high girl that the home had pretty much given up on. It's just like, oh, you know, a lot of the kids in the home, they're the bottom of the class. Like, a lot of the kids. They're, like, really bottom of the class at their school because no one believes in them. They don't have academies to go to. They don't have someone, you know, encouraging them. And so if someone tells them, oh, you're stupid or you're slow, they just believe it and boom, it becomes their identity. And that was this one junior high girl. And I taught her English, and she would get on her tests typically like a 14 out of 100, you know, a 16. And this is multiple choice where you have five answers. So technically, she should at least get 20%, you know. But she would get 14, 16. And I remember some of the workers saying, like, why are you even trying with her? Like, she's just, you know, focus on the smart ones. But I would teach her and taught her how, you know, to read and taught her, you know, what to look out for the tests. And I remember her bringing back her first test after teaching her for a while. And she put it down on the table. I was like, look. And I looked down, and it's a 15. And I'm looking at it, And I'm like, I taught you all this. And I turn the test towards her. All right, number one, read it. And she reads it. And she's like, oh, you know, like this, like, oh, you know, I don't want to try. And I'm like, read it. All right, read A, read B, read C. And then she got the right one. Oh, you got that one. How about that? All right, number two. And she does it again. And she ends up going through the test and realizing she could have gotten a good grade on that test. And I'm like, you are smart. You are smart. You can do this. Look, you're seeing this. You can do this. And you know, and I asked her, when you got this test, like you always do, is this what you did? When you got the test, oh, no more. Oh, it's too difficult. Just put your head down. She said, yeah, that's what I did. She didn't even try. She just scribbled in some of the answers, left others blank, and just handed it in because that's how she felt like life would be. I'm not good at anything. I can't amount to anything. All right? And so I showed her, no, you can do this. And I remember the next test, she brought it back, and it was like a 60, 65, something like that. And she was like, look what I got, you know, like so happy. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's a huge improvement from a 15. And, you know, I encouraged her. But I took the test, and I put it in front of her, and I showed her the one she got wrong. And sure enough, she could have gotten a lot of them right. The next test she brings back, I think it was like an 84. It was the highest grade she'd ever gotten. And she was just like, I can't believe this. And the next test, like 88. And I remember the workers at the home being like, what on earth happened to her? Like, who is this girl? Like, what is this? And it just shows if these kids get someone to believe in them, if these kids get someone to encourage them, oh, they have so much potential, so much potential. And so it's not just these university students we want to reach. It's also all the other kids. But we got to start with what we can start with. And that's the kids in Oak Tree Project, the kids that get into college. And, you know, the love of the family, it's not just confidence that rises up within them. It's also emotional support. It's also health. I mentioned a lot of, you know, kids struggle with depression after they leave the home, and some commit suicide. And one of the boys in our program, he came to the children's home not knowing anything about his family. He was just really young, so he didn't know anything about his family. Just, you know, figured true orphan, you know, no family whatsoever. But when he had to move out of the orphanage, he was in the Oak Tree Project at this time, but he was kind of quiet and he wasn't sharing everything at the time. But he found out, he got his records as he was moving out, and he found out he had a dad still alive. And so he tracked down his dad, and he found out that his dad is living in a Lotte Castle apartment. It's a nice apartment complex. And so he tracked his dad down, got his phone number. We didn't know anything about this. This is just what he was doing on his own. And he called his dad. And his dad got really angry and said, I never want to hear from you again. Don't ever contact me again. Okay? Don't ever come near me. And, you know, that was it. You know, for a kid that grew up in a home thinking he had no family, that's one thing. But then to find out you have family and to be rejected so severely by that family, and to know that they're doing well, I mean, it's hard for anyone to even imagine. And we didn't know that he was doing this. We found this out later, but we remember meeting up with him, and his health just was bad. I mean, he had lost so much weight in his cheeks, and he just didn't look good. And we didn't know what was going on, and so we just encouraged him. And I remember, you know, he had grown a lot as we had been mentoring him. But that meeting, it seemed like he wasn't receiving anything. And he was looking at us with skepticism. And, you know, it took time. And as we met with him, it seemed like the ice was starting to melt. And by the end of our time together, we kept emphasizing, we need you to take care of yourself. We fed him really good that day, gave him a lot of food. And he was just like, you could see a little bit of trust coming back. That trust that had been there before, but was suddenly shaken. It was coming back. And we met up with him again. And, you know, the next month, and his health was returning. And little did we know, that was what he was going through. And, you know, if we hadn't been there, if Oak Tree Project hadn't been there for him, I don't know how he would have handled that situation. If he had been alone and not had someone speak into his health, like, hey, we care about you, you're important to us, you know, we want you to be healthy, I don't know what would have happened to him. I know what's happened to other kids like that, you know, who committed suicide and you know, or fell deep into depression. I don't know what would have happened to him, but I'm so thankful that this program was there so that he was caught, okay, and he's doing well. This program has released a lot of encouragement. In fact, we have a few People here that are in this program, Oak Tree Pride, you might not know that. You don't look around, you know, you won't know who they are. But some of them volunteered at our soccer camp this past summer. So they're Oak Tree Project students, and then there was another girl that grew up in the home, and now she's just working full-time. But three of them, they volunteered at our soccer camp this past summer. And it was so cool to watch these volunteers, you know, our Oak Tree Project students, who had once, you know, a couple of them have been pretty difficult in their home, you know, and stuff. Now being in good health and serving the kids and just loving on the kids and getting a heart for the children. It was just so beautiful to see them giving back. We don't want to just, here's some money, here, let's mentor you through college and go on your way. We want these students to receive and then give. We want them to get that heart of love, of giving back. And that student that Mi Jung mentored that became the inspiration for Oak Tree Project, she sponsors kids from our home. That's so inspirational. That's so beautiful. And for these students, one of them was a male volunteer, and the kids, the third to sixth grade boys from the children's home that gathered at the soccer camp, he was the favorite volunteer on his team. They loved him, and they had no idea about his background. They're just like, oh, he's so mushy still. Like, oh, he's so cool. He's funny. He's cool to be around. And I remember driving a bunch of the boys back to their children's home on the last day. I was like, oh, who is your favorite volunteer? And they all said that boy, that Oak Tree Project student. And I told them, hey, did you know that he grew up in a children's home too? And their jaws just like dropped. And they're like, wow, I can become like that? Like, what? And they're like, can I become a volunteer in the future too? You know, for soccer camp? And it's inspirational for these kids living in the home that are like that boy that I shared, you know, would go to the park and fear for the future. And other kids that would fear for the future to see graduates from the home doing well and even giving back, even loving on the kids back. That's so inspirational. And that's what we want. And my heart, if you did not know, it's not just for the kids of South Korea. It's for all of Korea. And my hope is that eventually through Oak Tree Project and the kids that we've been serving in the homes at Ji's home, Mi Jung's home, and other homes, that when North Korea opens up, and who knows when that will be, but when it opens up, that we will go in together and build orphanages there. And my dad, other people, they've had dreams of me and of other, you know, volunteers working with the kids to take care of the kids of North Korea. That would be so beautiful. That's what we want. So how can you help? How can you encourage Oak Tree Project? I want to first speak, before the physical things you can do, I want to speak about your heart. And I want you to turn to Mark chapter 2. Let's see God's heart for people like kids in Oak Tree Project. Mark chapter 2. Going to read verses 16 and 17. Jesus is just called Levi, also known as Matthew. He wrote the Gospel of Matthew. He was a tax collector, considered one of the worst of men, tax collector. Jesus has called him as a disciple, and Matthew has invited Jesus and the other disciples to his home, which is likely a big mansion or whatever, and he's got all these other tax collectors and sinners, and they're all hanging out with Jesus. And in verse 16, it says, "And the scribes of the Pharisees," these were the teachers of the law, "when they saw that Jesus was eating with sinners and tax collectors, they said to his disciples, 'Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?' And when Jesus heard it, he said to them, 'Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick, I came not to call the righteous, but sinners.'" See, Jesus came for the sick. Jesus came for the broken. Jesus came for the hurting. Jesus came that we might have life and have it to the full. Jesus loves the broken people. But Jesus' heart for these people is not a heart of pity. Oh, poor you. Oh, you guys are just so bad. He didn't hang out with those tax collectors and judge them. Or like, oh man, this is such a mess. He wouldn't go to an orphanage and be like, oh, this is so sad. I'm just crying. Like, oh, this is so pitiful. And just stand there. Oh, it's so sad. I have seen so many people cry during my sermons when I share about the orphans and do nothing. Pity, apart from action, apart from hope, is worthless. Compassion, apart from action, not just action, but hope, is worthless. And in fact, it only accentuates the issue. Okay? If I had seen, you know, that girl that I taught English and seen her grades and seen how she had been treated and knew her background of, you know, why she came into the children's home, I could have sat there and just cried, you know, in front of her. Like, oh, it must be so hard. Oh, poor you. Oh, poor you. And you know what that does? It doesn't comfort. It makes them feel more poor. It makes them feel more, oh, that's right. That's right. I am a poor, pathetic person. And that's wrong. That is not the gospel. Jesus didn't come to cry and look at, you know, the leper. Oh, poor you. Jesus came to heal. Jesus came and he looked upon the leper. He looked upon the tax collector. He looked upon the prostitute with hope. You might be broken right now, but you will be a new creation. When you know me, you're a new creation. You see, when a doctor, think about a doctor. When a doctor takes care of a patient, all right, you come in and you got cancer or something. And he treats you and he's like, oh, you got cancer. Does the doctor cry? Oh, poor you. Oh, it's so sad. Oh, and just, how would you feel? Like, what are you doing? Treat me. I came to get healed. The doctor doesn't cry. The doctor doesn't pity you. All right, he may have compassion. Compassion is good. But if compassion doesn't have hope or action, compassion is worthless and is actually dangerous. What does the doctor do? He heals you. All right, the doctor does the treatment to get rid of that cancer, to get rid of that sickness. He does whatever it takes. And then when you are healed and now you're all better, he doesn't get with you and be like, man, do you remember those horrible years? Oh, it's so sad. No, that'd be a horrible doctor. So the doctor says, he celebrates. Look at your recovery. Think of the years ahead. This is wonderful. And when you think of your sickness, you can think instead of, oh, so it was so bad, rather with joy. Of, wow, I was once sick, I was once hurting, but now I'm healthy, and we rejoice. This is the heart that we have to have for these kids. I don't want pity for these children. These kids are amazing. These kids are smart. All right, these kids have ability. And if they can just get someone to believe in them, to encourage them, to be family to them, if they can know the Lord, man, nothing is impossible. Nothing is impossible for these kids. They don't need your pity. They need your love, and they need you to believe in them, to look at them and see them, just like I looked at that girl who couldn't do any English at all, and say, no, 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 you are smart. God's made you fearfully and wonderfully, and you are able. This is the first thing you need before helping the children. And honestly, when I get people that just cry, I say, stay away from my home. All right, you're a mess. You know, go, you know, meet Jesus and get some hope. All right? I need people with hope for these kids. I need people that when these kids, you know, scrape their knee or these kids make a mistake, they don't cry or they don't like it. They heal them. They hug them. They build them up. They discipline them. They believe in them. This is what we need for Oak Tree Project, for serving them, for serving the homeless, for serving anywhere. If you have no hope for the homeless, then why are you even feeding them? You know, if a doctor has no hope for a patient, then why is he even treating them? Give the patient to someone else. You got to have hope for them, and then coupled with action. Most important thing. All right, physically, what can you do in the physical? Some of you know Oak Tree Project inside and out, so this has just been a review sermon. Others of you, it's very new. For those of you, it's new. I want to encourage you to go to the back after the service and sign up for our prayer updates. Doesn't matter if you're 15 years old. All right, you can pray. You just write down your name and your email, and you will get a monthly report. And it's not like super long, like this 10 megabyte newsletter. No, it's just like a couple paragraphs with some prayer requests, and you can pray for the kids. This means a lot. Your prayers, they move mountains. All right. Something I was sharing last night at another prayer meeting was when Jesus saw the man that was demonized, the man that said, I have a demon of, it's called legion within me because there's so many demons within me. When Jesus went to that land, This guy that was so possessed by so many demons, the story of this guy was the people in the village, they would try and like chain him down because the guy was so crazy and berserk, so possessed by the devil. They would try and chain him. But the guy had so much of the enemy in him and all this demonic power that he would break the chains, he would strip himself naked, and he would run among the tombs. Just a demonized, lost man. Of all the lost people in the world, he's probably the most lost. So what does Jesus do when he gets there? He gets off the boat and he prays at a distance. come out of you, come out of him, you unclean spirit. Now, Jesus is at a distance, and he's interceding from a distance. What does this demon-possessed man do? You would think if he's got all the power of the devil in him, legion, this big, scary, you know, all these demons, that the demons would be like, oh, shoot, Jesus is here. Let's go. Let's move and run away. But no, Jesus is praying. And as Jesus is praying, grace is going out to this man. And as grace hits him, suddenly there's this grace of, even though there's all this demonic force trying to repel him from Jesus, he runs to Jesus and he falls on his knees in front of Jesus. And there's still fear in him. Like, what are you going to do to me? But he knows, this is where I got to be. The demons wouldn't have him come to Jesus, okay? Instead, there was this grace that came within him. I need to be healed and delivered. And he comes to Jesus, and Jesus casts out the demons. No problem. Just boom, they're gone. And the guy, his sanity comes back. He gets clothed, and the villagers become greatly afraid. Because we knew this guy, man. This guy was the lost of the lost. He was the most pitiful person. He had no hope for this man. But you prayed. You prayed at a distance, and grace came upon him. And he came running. And now look at him. He's not just recovering and struggling. No, now he's completely restored. When you pray for these kids, that's what's happening. You're praying at a distance, and some of these kids, they don't want to know Jesus. Some of these kids, they are in sex trafficking. They are in this stuff, and they're lost, and they don't even know where to go. But as you pray at a distance like Jesus, there's this grace that comes upon them. And our prayer is that they'll come running. Our prayer is that they'll come returning, just like the prodigal, and they'll get on their knees, and they'll say, I need a Savior. I need Jesus. Guys, we need your prayers. Your prayers are powerful. Even if they're at a distance, they are powerful. All right, so please go to the back, write down your name, write down your email. That's big. Number two, if you can speak Korean, and you are in Korea for the next 2 to 4 years, I'd love for you to become a mentor. All right, to consider this. That's calling a student once a week, meeting up with them once a month. All right, you need to be healthy, you know, spiritually. So if you're going through a lot of your own issues, all right, maybe next year, you know, and stuff, but you signing, you just checking that mark in the back of I'm interested in becoming a mentor won't automatically make you a mentor. But we would love to see people that are interested, and we will contact you. And if you become a mentor, it would start in February next year. Okay, that's mentoring. Once a week, meet with them once a month. And if you're really poor, we give a stipend to the mentors for the meal. All right, so you don't have to worry about, you know, buying meals every month. If you have money, which I know some of you do, a few of you, I think, not many. I think our membership class today is students, 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 students. Now, that's great, you know. God bless the students. You guys pray, you know. But if you have a job and you have some funds, for you guys, rather than supporting Oak Tree Project, I want to ask you guys to consider supporting Mijeon here in this house. All right, she is the mentor that inspired Oak Tree Project. Without Mijeon, we wouldn't have Oak Tree Project today. She's a full-time missionary, just like G, just like myself. Now, the advantage for G and for myself is that we're from America, and we have some friends in America that can support us. All right, Mijeon is from Korea. Her family, her church family, are you guys. All right, you guys are the ones that send Mijeon out, believe it or not. She is our missionary here. And so the vast majority of our support has to come from here. And I know there's a lot of you that aren't supporting anyone in the house. And I would encourage you, if you were stirred by today, stirred by what I shared about the kids, please consider supporting Mijeon. You can talk to her. You can talk to me about that. Or you can sign up for the email updates. And when we send you the email, just reply and say, I'm interested in supporting Mijeon. I would greatly appreciate that. I know that would bless Mijeon and G as well. So financially, if you guys could support her, that would be wonderful. And the last thing is that we have Oak Tree Run coming up. Oak Tree Run is on October 15th. It's a 5K, 10K, and a half marathon at Yoinaru Han River Park. That's Yoido. And it's 100% of the proceeds are going to go to Oak Tree Project, to the scholarship fund. So you pay 33,000 won to register. You get a free T-shirt. Yay. Okay. And then it all goes to the kids. I don't collect anything. All right, the marathon organizer doesn't collect anything. It all goes to the kids. That's beautiful. All right, that's a great opportunity. We got a lot of flyers in the back. Just take a bunch, Give them out to your coworkers, to your fellow students. Put them up all over Seoul National, you know, whatever. Put them out and try and encourage people to come out. Because it's a great opportunity, not just for you guys to bless the kids and to raise awareness. It's a great opportunity for you to reach out to people and bring them together and connect with more people through the run. So that is Oak Tree Run, Saturday, October 15th. And, yeah, I want to encourage you guys. If you were, your heart was stirred today, sign up in the back. Get some flyers. You know, there's also a book back there by Pastor Eddie Byun on Justice Awakening. If you want to read more about human trafficking, which is a huge issue here in Korea, not just for the orphan, you can buy that book. It's a huge discount. Normally, it's about 15,000 won. We're selling it for 2,000 won. So you can get that, or you can give it to a friend who you think might be interested in it. Let me close this time in prayer. God, we thank you that you are a father to the fatherless. God, we thank you that you set the lonely into families. God, we thank you that you love these kids. You don't pity them, God. These kids are amazing. They're your creation. God, they're so special. They are amazing. And God, I just speak forth hope rising up, not just in them, but in people around them, Lord, that the church especially, not just the church here at Shilin, but all the other churches, that we will get your heart for the broken, not a heart of pity, but a heart of hope and a heart of action, that we will go forth and we will bring healing, we will bring family, we will bring love to these different people, and that we will see light rise up in this nation, that we will see so many hurting people suddenly be made whole and made strong, no longer looking back on their past, but looking forward in celebration of who they've become. God, we praise you for your goodness. We praise you for your provision and for your love. Pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.